Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ahead to Warren Fogle, Carolina. Turning it over, it's Ovechkin stepping in with Backstrom. Smith Pelly to trailer. Now to Backstrom, low shooting, scores! Nick Backstrom has done it again! His second of the game! It's 2-0 Washington!
Fourth and final hour of Grant and Danny kicks off here on The Fan. Pete's in for Danny today. At 1:30, Ryan Kerrigan, who got Capital One Arena hopping with his Let's Go Caps chant and beer chug before the Capitals played the Canes on Saturday night. John Walton, as you just heard on that call there, was busy. 6 goals for the Capitals. He's on the Mattress Warehouse hotline. He's on the call tonight. You can hear the game on The Fan just after 7 o'clock. John, any truth to the rumor that you had to tag in Ben Raby to finish the game? You lost your voice. There were so many goals.
There was a lot going on, no doubt. Yeah, it was the kind of night that this team needed, though. I mean, when you look at where they were in the first 4 games, even when they won game one and game two, I didn't think that they had gotten to the level they needed to get to. I think Carolina gave them as much or more than they wanted, even in the winning efforts and certainly in the losses here in Raleigh in games three and game four. But I thought they were excellent in Game 5, and not just offensively either. They drove the play because they were physical. They were nasty to play against. I thought Devontae Smith-Pelly's reemergence into the lineup was a bit of an inspiration for them. I think they rallied around the fact that T.J. Oshie wasn't with them. I think it was a great performance. I think if they are able to approach that, certainly Carolina's going to be better here tonight. But I think that when you look at what happened in Game 5, you carry any bit of that over and that tough to play against mentality into this one tonight. I think the series ends here.
John, Carolina's got a lot of ifs, ands, and maybes going into this game about guys who could be, might be, sort of back in the lineup. And even if they are, those guys not likely at 100%. How much of the way the game was played, obviously on Saturday night, clearly you don't have the home ice advantage with the crowd behind you, but just the way the Capitals played presented a change from the way they had played in this series and obviously put Dougie Hamilton in an odd spot for film review the next day. How much should the Caps be inspired about the way they played and being able to carry that over to enemy ice coming up tonight?
Yeah, I think the style of play can certainly carry over. The only thing that will be different here tonight is the fact that you don't have that last change. But if everybody is rolling along and talking about the four forward lines now, like they did in Game 5, I don't know that it's going to matter too much. And I think that's where having Devontae Smith-Pelly back with an inspired fourth line, I don't think Washington's fourth line has been good enough in this series up until Game 5, and it's made it a little bit harder, especially for the games here, to be able to combat whatever the Hurricanes have thrown at them. Having said that, now that you've got, you know, a more physical fourth line, and you mentioned Dougie Hamilton, we had a little fun at his expense too, just because he heard the train coming and he got out of the way, and it turned into what we thought was at least a game-changing goal, if not a series-changing goal, where the Capitals at that point, it's 2-0, now it's 3-0, game's over. And it only got worse for him from there. So I think that physical will and want has to be a big part of it, but that's what made him successful last spring. I think they had a little bit of a reawakening in Game 5 that really wasn't as prevalent or present, perhaps, in Games 1 through 4. Do that tonight, and I think you've got to be able to withstand the crowd. I mean, it's going to be crazy here tonight, but I think beyond that, I think you get through that first 10 minutes, first period, get the game's first goal. There hasn't been a lead change yet in this series, so get that first goal, and maybe that's enough.
John, speak to and quantify the difference Jonas Siegenthaler's made as a steadying influence opposite John Carlson.
Oh, I think that's a real big piece of what was successful in Game 5, and it's easy to talk about Backstrom and the goals and Ovechkin and the rest, but Jonas Siegenthaler gave the Capitals something I'm not sure they've had since March, and that was stability on the back line in the absence of Michael Kempe. It's not easy to be able to ride shotgun with John Carlson and play against the other team's top players. You're playing against Aho and Teravainen, and that was, I thought, a terrific performance by him under some pretty adverse circumstances. You're playing in your second career Stanley Cup playoff game. You're playing with the number one defenseman on this team who plays in all situations, and you acquitted yourself really well. And I think the reason that he did was his ability to take a hit in his own zone when Carolina's tracking back and following in for the puck. He's not afraid to take a hit. He made a play. He gets the puck moving. And really, not many mistakes, I didn't think. Nothing that was egregious and nothing that was costly anyway. And more importantly, being able to log 16, 17 minutes and get everybody lefty-righty all the way down the list. Carlson's not trying to play on his offside. Jensen's not trying to play on his offside. Orpik's not getting overextended in terms of minutes. There was a lot that Jonas Siegenthaler's performance did for him, but also for this team. He continues to do that. Maybe, just maybe, the Capitals have that answer they're going to need if they want to make another long run.
Caps play-by-play voice, John Walton with us here on 106.7 The Fan. He'll have the call with the puck drop just after 7 o'clock here tonight on The Fan. John, to piggyback on that lineup change, and what else has been in your mind from seeing all the action develop? Why is Washington, after the 45-shot debacle, been able to come back and hold the Hurricanes to 24 and 30, which are significant numbers well below what this team put up during the regular season the last two games?
Yeah, I think a lot of it, gets back to the defensive struggles, and Christian Zuse had a tough goal when we were here the last time for Game 3 and Game 4, and when Carolina got the goal in Game 4, they scored 17 seconds into the game. They've had a lead at the end of the first period each of the first two games of the series that have been played here in North Carolina. So when the momentum started cascading down, you had guys playing not necessarily out of position, but certainly in positions they're not familiar with, and they struggled because of it. And I think that when you're not breaking out pucks, and Carolina's forecheck was all the rage and all the things that we were talking about in Game 3 and Game 4, but it's tough to forecheck when you don't have the puck and you get the clean breakouts, and that's what's the biggest key, I thought, in Game 5. They're moving very quickly. And in getting from the neutral zone into the offensive end and making life tough on Peter Mrazek, they didn't do that at all. Peter Mrazek had the easiest shutout he's ever going to have in Game 3. He only gave up an Ovechkin power play goal here in Game 4, but he gave up six because a lot in no small part because of the breakouts that they had. And being able to generate offensive chances. They're playing defense by playing offense. And there's still a little bit more to give. It's still been quiet for Hagelin. It's been quiet for Kuznetsov. It's been quiet for Vrana. Like to see those guys get going tonight. But I think the offensive side of their game is preventing a lot of scoring chances at the other end. They continue that tonight, they're going to be fine.
John Walton, listen to him just after 7 here on 106.7 The Fan. Were you surprised with the impact Devontae Smith-Pelly had after weeks of being in Hershey in the AHL with the Bears?
I was and I wasn't. He had struggled at midseason. There was a reason he got sent down. He hadn't had a point in 30 games. He was fighting it. And, I think what was not surprising to me is that the rest of the room loves this guy, and to have him back in there, I think it was a big emotional lift for everyone in that room because he is such a beloved figure there. I think the energy that he played with, I think he was terrific in Game 5. He needs to continue to do that. He's got to be able to be physical on the boards. He's got to make that fourth line tough to play against. And even on the penalty shot that Dowd got, that was in large part because, the fourth line creates a scoring chance. And Smith-Pelly was a big part of that drive up ice when Dowd gets the penalty shot and ends up getting the goal. So I think what he was able to do, I think about it, guys. I can't think of a time where a guy struggles offensively. He gets sent to the minors. He clears waivers. So he could have been gone. Nobody put a claim in on him. He comes back, gets a standing ovation from the crowd. Obviously what he did last year means a lot to the fan base and to our city. But my goodness, I can't think of another time in my career that someone goes through that kind of adversity and gets that kind of warm response, not just from the players, but from the fans themselves. I thought it was awesome.
John, it's interesting because this is really the first time the Capitals have been in this situation. They are the defending Stanley Cup champions, and I thought Saturday night was as much about showing some of that championship pedigree and the leader of this team showed you championship pedigree with his play. We know he's always a threat to score goals, but I thought what Alexander Ovechkin did the other night, almost without the puck and at times setting up plays, was as equally important to any game he's played in the playoffs for this team, because he, in some ways, helped get this series back under control without scoring goals with some of the ancillary stuff that he did. Your thoughts on the way he played on Saturday?
Terrific, and I agree with everything you just said, and I would go probably one step further in saying that as defending champs, and for he, and I would put Nick Backstrom in this category too, the guys who have been here the longest, the guys who have contributed as much as they have, they are now unburdened by all conversations. Gosh, are you guys ever going to get over the hump and win a Stanley Cup? And I think in this series, part of being defending champs, and certainly a positive for those guys, and saying, you know what, they have done it before. They are unburdened now. They go out and just play the game with almost a freer offensive way than we've seen in the past. And Ovechkin passing the puck, and it's Backstrom finishing. Guys, they just look like they're having fun. And I think that that leadership, even when the Capitals weren't playing at their best in this series early on, I think they were at their absolute best in Game 5, still maybe with more to even give in a Game 6 tonight. But they've been good throughout. And with Backstrom now with 5 goals in the series and leading the team in points, and Ovechkin the guy that's getting him the puck. I love the quote earlier in the series when they asked Alex after the game. He said, I'm Backstrom now. Like, I'm not going to go quite that far yet, but he's been really good at distributing the puck, much like Nicky would do. And they've been a lot of fun to watch. And the more you watch and the more you see the progression through the course of this series, you can at least see the roadmap. Hopefully they can take it toward putting another long run together. But if it is to be, it'll certainly be because of those two guys up front.
John Walton, listen to him tonight just after 7 here on The Fan. What your Twins did to the Orioles this weekend should have resulted in them going to jail. Thank you for joining us, buddy.
I appreciate that. Go Twins. Go O's too, but not this past weekend.
Yeah, I think they just hit another 6 home runs while we were on the phone. There's John Walton on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Next, a piece just came out via a publication that I want to see how you react to it, Pete. It relates directly to us, and it's pretty interesting. The worst jobs in America. We'll get to that next here on The Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Grant and Danny on The Fan. I'll tell you what the worst jobs in America are, according to some rankings, in a moment. Couple of notes from around the NFL. Travis Frederick feels good, does not know how his body's going to react once the pads go on, though, as he continues to make his comeback as the center for the Dallas Cowboys. He's become a really important piece for Dallas as well. Without him last year, that offensive line got worse. The offense paid the price a little bit. He missed all of last season battling a syndrome, and I think it's called something like Guillain-Barré or something like that. I don't remember. That's basically how it's spelled. But basically, it was a scare for him where he's now ready for training camp. He's confident in his body, but he has to take on contact that he's not going to be able to encounter until camp starts. He says, we really don't know until I get out there and actually do it. I feel good. Everything that I'm doing, everything's been on schedule, ahead of schedule. So I feel good. I'm excited to get back out there. But if he does come back, that's a big boon for Dallas because he's one of the better centers in the NFL.
And, of course, as we know, centers, great communicator along that offensive line. And also last year with some of the issues they had with Tyron Smith as well from an injury standpoint, if you get that Dallas offensive line back to full strength, that makes Ezekiel Elliott more effective. That, in turn, could make Dak Prescott a little bit more effective and thus make their offense that much more dangerous in Dallas this coming season.
I think most people feel like we know what's going to happen in the first 2 picks of the draft. Now, we could be wrong come Thursday night, but it sounds like Kyler Murray, number 1, to Arizona. And then San Francisco takes Nick Bosa out of Ohio State. At number 3, the Jets are on the clock. The prevailing thought And the pick there on most mocks is Kentucky linebacker Josh Allen as the best player on the board. They're apparently, according to reports from Rich Samimi of ESPN, down on Josh Allen. The guy that they really like, and it's just a matter now of whether or not they could move down and get him a couple picks later, is Ed Oliver from Houston. I know a lot of people are saying it would be too early to draft him at number three. You have independent knowledge of Ed Oliver calling Navy games in that conference. You saw him a bunch. Would that be too rich, third overall, for Oliver?
I think depending on where you're going to play him, you've seen teams. The problem is with his abilities, you can play him on the interior, you can play him on the edge, but I don't know how well consistently against those big tackles, big athletic tackles, that frame at 280 pounds plays against those guys who can engulf you at the great size we see from the tackle position. I also think if Ed Oliver lost 10 pounds because of his ability to go side to side, I've seen coaches talk about him as they've never seen, and we played Aaron Donald at Navy, and our coach said Ed Oliver is by far the best defensive lineman he's ever seen in terms of effort. Side to side, never takes a playoff.
So he was better in college than Donald at Pitt, according to Nia Manalolo.
And more effective against us because of his ability to go side to side, and he never took a playoff, ever. Never took a playoff. And he's a guy that you have to account for on the defensive line. There are not a lot of defensive linemen that you have to specifically game plan for. For Oliver, you did because he can do so many things to beat you with his abilities. Do I think that's a smidge high? Depending on how the Jets want to use him, yes. So I do believe, they could go down to maybe six and still get at Oliver. After six, I think Ed Oliver's in play for everybody.
Yeah,
I think there's enough other people that like Josh Allen out there from Kentucky. Tremendous, tremendous pass rusher coming off the edge. Highly productive college player. You hope it translates to the league, but certainly the college production was there.
Well, it's just a matter of you don't want to reach. You don't want to take a guy too soon when you can get a bunch back for moving back two picks. But if you love a player, you got to take him.
Look,
he's going to be an all-pro, if you think he's a 6-7-time pro bowler, who cares if you take them three picks?
We see it all the time. One or two teams fall in love with a guy,
yeah,
and they think, we got to get up to number three. We can't let him get past number three. Somebody's going to want to take him, and they give you too much. They give you that little extra nugget in the package that you say, okay, deal, ring the bell. And that's, I think there are going to be some teams that are in search of at that number three position that are going to make the Jets give them that little extra chicken nugget, give them a 10-piece instead of a six. And everybody's happy.
Pete is in for Danny today. You're listening to Grant and Danny on the Fan. In 10 minutes, Ryan Kerrigan's going to join us, Redskins outside linebacker. A lot to cover with him, including having had a baby this offseason. Of course, last offseason he got married, but he was at the Caps game. He is rocking the red. He's been a big Caps fan over the last several years and was seen on big screen chugging a beer and honoring TJ Oshie before game 5, so we'll ask him about that. Have you seen this list of the 10 worst jobs in America?
Looking right at it, buddy.
All right, good. I was going to quiz you if you hadn't seen it yet, but we'll just run through it.
Mm-hmm.
Number one worst job in America, according to USA Today, taxi driver. I wonder how much of that is that Uber has largely replaced, not necessarily the need for taxis, but taxis as the number one way to get around. I don't use taxis anymore unless I'm at an airport and I think it's just going to be difficult to actually find my Uber. It's going to be too confusing. But taxi is now the worst job in America, according to USA Today.
Great video game. However, because of Uber and the value you get in Uber or Lyft more often than not, trumps taxis because taxis are expensive as hell.
Logger is number two. Is that the person that actually cuts the wood or that has it in their truck?
Probably the person that sits in the woods and cuts it down.
Okay, so I know nothing about that job other than that I'm sure it's very, very difficult. And I couldn't do it.
Well, a tree could fall on you and you could die.
Yeah, I would say that's a pretty bad job.
Good.
I hope those people get paid very well. A third, newspaper reporter. Obviously not a great time to be a journalist. You are under siege and you are being bashed pretty regularly in the media. I guess that sounds weird to say at this point. But how about this? Number three, worst job in America, newspaper reporter. Number seven, worst job in America, disc jockey. Number eight, worst job in America, broadcaster. Pete, we don't have good jobs, apparently. I thought we had a great job.
Because we're all, the number seven and number eight being replaced by automation. A lot of syndication. You could just throw it on the bird and let them run with it. That's why.
It's partially that, no doubt. I also think there's something to be said. This says the least job security in the U.S. labor force is what they were looking at here. I mean, if you start to make any money, you get any acclaim, you get pretty good at what you do, you get a raise. That's the way jobs work. So look around at your favorite TV stations or your favorite networks where you love broadcasters. They've been around a while. They make a lot of money. They're probably just replaced for someone who's probably not as good, but certainly cheaper. A lot of jobs work that way, but especially the sports and really the news media at this point.
More importantly, how much money are you generating? How much revenue are you generating for your company? If you generate revenue for your company, you're sticking around. If people don't want to jump on board and advertise with you and have you sponsor stuff, well, then you're looking for the next gig somewhere in Nebraska, maybe.
Some other jobs that are apparently among the 10 worst in the country, according to USA Today, retail salesperson, enlisted military personnel, corrections officer. Of course, you're dealing with some difficult clientele there.
Yes, you are.
And painter. Why is being a painter such a bad gig all of a sudden?
Because
it's hard manual labor.
It is hard manual labor. You get paint all over you every day. If you get paint on somebody's house, they're pissed off and they want you to fix it at your expense and you got to come back. There's nothing appealing about that.
You probably get to listen to the radio while you work or, you know, listen to something entertaining. If the Nats are on, you get to listen to some baseball. And I don't know if you make your own hours, so to speak, but you could probably get a lot of good work on the side, I would think, where...
Sure.
You're a painter. A lot of people know that. They call you up. You say, I'll come take care of the couple rooms for a couple $100. I think that's a good situation.
You can generate a good cash business as a painter. So therefore, you are not giving up as much of your income to the government in that situation.
Straight cash, homie. Ryan Kerrigan needs no cash. He is very highly compensated. As an outside linebacker, he is one of the more consistent pass rushers in the National Football League. We'll talk to him about the draft, the Capitals, his weekend at Capital One Arena watching the boys next on The Fan.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The NFL draft is on Thursday. The Redskins need a lot, but they do not need to replace their top pass rusher on the outside, Ryan Kerrigan, who's good for a dozen sacks a year. They don't have to worry about the pressure coming off that edge. They might try to upgrade opposite him, where Ryan Anderson is slotted to be the guy right now. We wanted to have Ryan Kerrigan on the Mattress Warehouse hotline because of the weekend that he had when he led the Let's Go Caps chant at Capital One Arena, pulled that sweater over his head and chugged a beer through it like he was TJ Oshie. Caps by a million, I knew they were going to win, and sure enough, they won 6-0. Ryan, I'm giving you all the credit. I think had you not have done that, it might have been a 2-1 loss. You do that, and the boys dominate. I think you set the tone at Capital One Arena.
I mean, I don't want to take all the credit for the win, but I'll take most of it for sure. I mean, that was I'm just kidding. That was unbelievable, man. To get to do that in front of all the fans, and especially with Oshie getting hurt in the previous game, I thought it was only right that paid some homage to him. And hey, they won 6-0, so it didn't hurt.
All right, so take me through the planning phase then and kind of obviously you were thinking about it throughout the day. I know I chatted with you. How did you come up with it? And at any point did you think, well, maybe I'm not going to be able to pull this off? Did you have to plan it out in advance? You were going to hand a fan a beer? Give me all the details here.
So when I originally asked to do it,
Ryan's phone's acting up. I'm going to throw him on hold real quick, Dar, and see if you can sort that out because I want to hear this story. Just for me? I need this story at this point so that I get the specifics on this. Because being at the arena, I got to tell you, when he started breaking into the Let's Go Caps chant, the place just absolutely lost its mind. All right, so Ryan's back. So take us through the deal.
So right when I got asked to do it last Tuesday or Wednesday, I immediately, first thing I'm thinking of, okay, how can I do something that's going to get the place fired up, not just Let's Go Caps. I'm like thinking, what can I do that's a little kind of out there? And that was the first thing that came to mind, honestly, because that was just such a memorable moment from the Caps victory parade last year, was when Oshie pulled the shirt over his head and chugged the Bud Light. But so I decided that's what I was going to do, and I decided I wasn't going to tell anybody about it, at least from like the Caps team, just because I didn't know if that would be frowned upon or not. I was like, I'm just going to do this. I think this will be cool, and see how it goes. Well, it gets to the 11th hour where we're getting ready to do it, and I'm like, I gotta tell them. Look, I'm planning to do this. Is that cool? And they were like, oh yeah, like, how many beers do you need? They were so cool about it. So it was the Caps were awesome about it, and really kind of just let me do whatever I felt would get the crowd fired up.
Ryan, have you always had a love for hockey, or just the fact that this is the professional hockey team doing great things in the city in which you're working, and you've kind of adopted the Capitals along the way, or have you always had a love for hockey?
I have not always had a love for hockey. Growing up in Indiana, hockey isn't very big there. I mean, it was all basketball and the Colts in Indiana. But when I got out here, I saw how much Cavs fans love going to Caps games, and it doesn't hurt that you have Alexander Ovechkin, who's one of the all time greats, playing on the team. And given that I've called this home for 8+ years now, it's been very easy to become a hockey fan and to become a Capitals fan and really kind of learn hockey better, and to the point where now I'm not just watching Caps games, I'm watching all these Cup games, and it's really fun to get to know the sport better.
Are you tight with any of the guys on the team that you keep in touch with at all? Like, did you hear from anybody after the game by chance?
Oshie tweeted at me, so that was cool. And then Tom Wilson actually reached out on Twitter and said it was awesome, and that he loved the Oshie chug and all that. So it was I definitely think a well received thing.
That's great. Ryan Kerrigan mentioned that he's been in D.C. for 8 years. He was, of course, a first-round pick by the Redskins in 2011. The draft is coming up on Thursday night. We could talk about that in a second. I'm not asking you to throw shade at anybody. I know it's not in your personality to do that, and it's certainly not the position I want to put you in. But I do want to point out, Bryce Harper took a lot of heat here because he never really decided he was going to love the D.C. sports teams. And a lot of players don't adapt to the teams in town. You have. And I wonder why that is. I'm of the belief if Bryce Harper's from Vegas and he wants to root for the Vegas Golden Knights, you do that. You're from Indiana. If the Pacers are playing the Wizards in the playoffs, you should root for the Pacers. You guys are just normal dudes like we are. You have a hometown. You have teams you like. Not all fans feel that way. Why have you decided to go the other direction and kind of embrace D.C. through and through?
Well, it's kind of two different situations because, for me, I didn't have a hockey or a baseball team growing up in Indiana. So it was like for me to come out and adopt the Nats and adopt the Capitals, that was an easy thing to do because I'd never had hockey or baseball teams growing up. Now, with the Pacers, I am a Pacers fan. When the Pacers were playing the Wizards in the postseason a few years back, I definitely was, cheering the Pacers on. So because that's just who you like growing up. So I definitely don't. I'm definitely with you in the fact that if Bryce Harper wanted to root on the Knights last year, that's his team. I'm sure that was really exciting for him because they never had a professional sports team. So for him to get a professional sports team and have it go to the Stanley Cup Final in year one, I'm sure that was a big deal for him.
Now Purdue's coming back here in basketball next year. You're gonna go support Purdue when they take on Maryland over in College Park?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. I'll be golden black from head to toe. I went there a couple of years back, which that place is awesome to watch a basketball game. That student section at College Park is unbelievable.
Ryan Kerrigan is with us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Watching Purdue in the tournament, but they have a couple of dudes on that team that were a
Carson
blast
Edwards.
To watch.
Carson Edwards. Ryan, you can relate to this as a top athlete in your profession, but what Carson Edwards did in the NCAA tournament was nothing short of miraculous to play at that level and that consistently the way he did in the tournament. How much fun was that to watch him elevate his play to that level?
It was amazing. Especially that was him for pretty much his entire career at Purdue. Toward the end of the regular season this year, he had some struggles, but during the tournament, he was unbelievable. And I mean, for him to, you know, 10 threes in that game versus Virginia, including that one that banked in the last minute where I at the time I'm thinking, oh, man, we're doing this. We're going to the Final Four. I mean, he was unbelievable. And, I mean, that's so when he decided to go pro, you know, after this tournament, I'm like, yeah, you definitely should, man. As much as I'd love to have him, you know, playing for us for a couple more years, for another year, but I mean, after that performance, I mean, go out like that, man. That was 42 points against a team that plays defense like Virginia was amazing.
Ryan Kerrigan on Grant and Danny. We'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about the NFL draft on Thursday. Look, outside linebackers a need. Preston Smith left, a good buddy of yours you were side by side with for years. Ryan Anderson is slated right now to start. He's mostly been coming off the bench on running downs. What are your thoughts on the outside linebacking position? A lot of people feel like you guys could use the number 15 pick on someone to be the Robin to your Batman.
Well, I have a lot of confidence in Ryan, first of all. I mean, he's come back for an offseason program in great shape. I mean, we were just running a little bit ago, and that dude looks like a deer running out there. He's really athletic, really strong guy. But, yeah, so I got a lot of confidence in Ryan. I got a lot of confidence in the guys we got in this room. I mean, Marcus Smith was a first-round pick from a few years back, and you know, we all just have to elevate our game. I mean, when you lose a guy like Preston who can, you know, add a good pass-rushing element, you know, to the game, everyone has to pick up their game.
I love our listeners because a few weeks ago on the show, Danny and I were talking about the fact that we never actually asked you if you were related to Nancy Kerrigan. We just assumed all along that someone would ask at some point. I guess it's never been brought up. So a listener just called in and said, don't forget to ask him if he's related to Nancy Kerrigan. So without further ado, is Nancy your aunt, Aunt Nancy?
No, she's not. I hate to disappoint everybody out there. No relation. I've been asked that question so many times in life.
Yeah.
People. Oh, yeah. Oh, so much. I mean, I've even had people, I remember college games, you know, fans are calling me Nancy, Ken, Nancy, and me. So but no relation, unfortunately.
Love it. Well, Ryan, thanks for joining us. It really was the perfect way to jumpstart Game 5. Unfortunately, you're not on the road with the team in Raleigh to get them pumped up, but perhaps we will see you back, ideally next round when they take on the Isles. Much appreciate you joining us.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. There's Ryan Kerrigan on Grant and Danny. Pete, there is something that this city loves, and it might be everywhere. I can't speak to that because I've only been in this market. But there's nothing that D.C. sports fans enjoy more than players repping the other teams they don't play for in the
sure.
city. Whatever that is, there's like this love affair. There's this romanticism with it. And when he had the Let's Go Caps chant working, people lost
their
mind.
I think that works in a lot of places. I think they get into, especially if it's a visible player. I mean, this is Ryan Kerrigan. This is one of the more
sure.
visible Washington Redskins. This isn't the guy that's like, you know, 53rd on the 53-man roster or on the practice squad or something like that. It's Ryan Kerrigan that gets out there and does that.
Kerrigan, need another 13 sacks and 4 forced fumbles in 2019. No pressure. We're Grant and Danny. Pete in for Danny today. You are listening to The Fan. We'll look ahead to the Caps and the Canes. Get you set for the other playoff games, NBA and NHL tonight. Next as we hit the leftovers.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We will wrap things up with the Caps and the Canes at the end of the segment. Our predictions for tonight. Welcome back, Grant and Danny. Final few minutes, 106.7 The Fan. Pete is in for Danny. Doubleheader in the NBA this evening. Bucks, Pistons from Detroit, game 4. Milwaukee's up 3-0. The Pistons have not put up much of a fight. Pete, I think this one's over. It's very simple. One of these teams has the Greek Freak, the other does not. And even if you had a fully healthy Pistons roster and Blake Griffin was on the floor throughout this series for Detroit, I still think they would have had no chance. But when they're not healthy and not 100%, it was just a matter of whether they could steal one game or Milwaukee would take one night off, and they just haven't.
That's an
That's an easy one to me. Giannis is at some point going to get credit for being the terrific player that he is.
He's about to when he wins the MVP award at the end of the year.
Correct. And obviously, look, as we know in this league, you got to win in the playoffs to get that respect. He's starting to earn it right now with an easy sweep of the Pistons.
The Rockets at the Jazz, game four of a series that is also 3-0. I can't believe Houston. Did you see over the weekend? I want to say it was when I was coming home from the Caps game is when I was listening. So James Harden was
3 for 20.
Yeah, he ended up 3 for 20, but he started even worse. He didn't hit, I don't think, any of his first 14 shots or maybe 1 of 15, something crazy like that. And they were still up in that game.
Tells you how far the Rockets have come this season. Early in the year, it had to be Harden or bust, but the rest of the club is now finally settled into their roles, playing a little bit more responsibly on defense. Really surprised they're up 3-0. I thought with Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, I thought Jazz would be a little bit more of a factor in this series. But give the Rockets a lot of credit. If the Jazz were ever going to beat them, it was going to be the other night. They did not. This series is over.
Let's get to the NHL, where there is one playoff game other than the Caps and the Canes tonight. It is also a Game 6. It is taking place in Dallas. I was wrong about the Stars. I thought Nashville would take them out in 6 games. Best case scenario for the Preds, they get a Game 7 back at home, but the Stars have a chance to close them out. Nashville's power play is broken. Their penalty kill has not worked. The Stars, just a definitively better team over the last couple of games in this series. And watching their matinee ahead of the Caps and the Canes at Capital One Arena on Saturday, that wasn't even close. I mean, Nashville, they'd be doing really well just to force a Game 7 at this point.
I think right now, depth of the Stars team just simply playing better than what Nashville is offering at this point. I mean, it's not real hard to figure out when teams are winning and teams are losing. If you're getting more production from your club overall throughout the depth, same thing we talked about with the Capitals the other night. You got production from all four lines. Dallas getting good play from really all four lines in this series. And right now, Nashville just not getting any kind of depth of production in this series. So we'll see if they can force a Game 7 coming up tonight.
Nationals-Rockies from Coors Field tonight. You can hear the game not on 106.7 The Fan, because we've got the Caps and the Canes, but on 99.1. The Nats are 10-10, looking to get back over .500. They are 5-4 away from Nationals Park this season. They've done their best work on the road. Jeremy Hellickson gets the start. He has made 2 starts, and he's pitched terrific in both of those outings. 2-0 with a 2.63. Now, big key for him here, as it is with anybody at Coors Field, is to keep the ball down. But he doesn't have the stuff to miss in the middle of the plate there. You will get absolutely clobbered. So you got to be at or below the knees and get a lot of weak ground ball contact. The good news is, even though Charlie Blackmon has come to life with a couple of homers over the last few days and a series against the Phillies, the Rockies lineup has been a major disappointment early this season. Obviously, Daniel Murphy broke a bone in his hand on opening day. They've struggled to get going. Terrible start to the season for former National Ian Desmond really hurt them as well. But they just haven't hit at all. So Hellickson, go out, throw strikes, work fast, be low in the zone, and take your chances.
Yeah, Trevor Story's been miserable for Colorado also this year. Another guy that they completely depend on a daily basis. And look, I mean, as we keep saying for the Nationals, Jeremy Hellickson's last 2 starts, even though he wasn't great in his last start, walked 4 guys, did not strike out a batter, but he kept the damage to a minimum. Colorado, you must keep damage to a minimum. If you've only given up 1 run in those 2 starts, he comes anywhere close to that again tonight for 5 or 6 innings, the Nationals certainly have a chance on the road.
Key storyline for the Nats is, first and foremost, will Anthony Rendon play? Anthony Rendon was out yesterday. Marlins had a chance to sweep Washington, and because of Steven Strasburg's masterpiece, they didn't. The Nats won 5-0. Rendon got hit by a pitch in the elbow on Saturday. It sounds like the injury list isn't going to be needed, but that doesn't mean he won't have to miss a second straight game and a second straight day, as they're going to potentially be cautious before allowing him to return. So I'll be monitoring that very closely. Also, Brian Dozier and Ryan Zimmerman have both been slow starters for the Nats, and they've both really struggled, rally killers at times for this team this year. They both hit home runs yesterday. Zimmerman hit 2, Dozier hit 1. Maybe a sign that they could be snapping out of their slumps, so keep track of that as they get to Coors Field, a place Zimmerman has loved to hit throughout his career. Finally, let's get back to the Caps, wrap things up with the biggest game of the night. I want your prediction, Pete. Score, X-Factor, what's going to happen?
Lars Eller, X-Factor with a late third period marker, possibly even into an empty net, as John Walton will sign off. It's 4-2. Oh! Washington.
Ooh, we got a multi-goal win and the good guys going on to round two to take on.
They're the better team.
Barry Trotz.
Great storyline. Let's go.
They are the better team. I got a 3-2 Caps win. I think they survive a late flourish and a push. I think they score the first goal tonight. And for the sixth time in this series in six games, the first goal scorer will go on to win the game. Give me 3-2. A goal from Jacob Verana tonight checks in with his first of the series. Chad Dukes versus the world is next. If you missed any part of our show today, Ryan Kerrigan on hanging out with the Caps at the arena, John Walton or Joe Beninati previewing the game, or our breakdown of the Redskins quarterback draft history, go to thefandc.com or grantanddanny.com/audio. Pete, it was a lot of fun, buddy.
Always glad to be here.
Thursday, we will have a draft show, Pete and I, from the Anthem at the Redskins draft party, which will be fun. Make sure you're listening Thursday night for that. Danny will be back tomorrow. Chad Dukes is up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.